everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
And I'm Alan.
We run ReverseThieves.com, an anime and manga blog and podcast site, where you can get 3+ blog posts every week, as well as various other podcasts, including our seasonal SWAT reviews, where we look at the first episode of a bunch of new shows of the season. And of course, you can get all the old episodes of the monthly Speakeasy Podcast there as well.
And if you have any questions or comments or show topics, please email them to us at ReverseThieves@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter. I'm HisuiRT.
And I'm NarutakiRT.
And if you like this podcast or any other thing that we do, please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. It helps us go up in the ranks and contact new listeners. Let's check in with what's new on the blog this month.
So it's end of the year, which means we're doing a bunch of wrap-up posts, our favorite manga that came out this year in the US, as well as anime. So we actually won't be talking about those things on the podcast. You gotta go to the blog to find out all of our favorite stuff.
It's all Zombieland Saga, don't worry about it. I spoiled it. It's fine. We do have a bunch of stuff. We also have Secret Santa, which if you're participating, clearly you've finished your show and you've already done your write-up. You're just waiting to post it on the 24th. It should be great.
All those people are trying to get on my good side, then, not Santa's, but...
You want to see what shows people watched or what shows or who picked who shows for who, then come on the 25th and see the reveals and see what people thought of the shows that they were assigned.
And Al was on a recent episode of the Old Taku podcast.
Yeah, I was talking about Garden of Sinners, otherwise known as Kara no Kyokai, a series of 7 movies plus some additional material. We really only talk about the 7 movies.
Oh, is that all?
Because Ink didn't realize they were, he thought they were like OVA length movies, like a half an hour. And so, and then he got more busy at work than he thought he was going to get. So, we had to put off recording several times, and he finally got through at least the 7 main movies. And we talk mostly about that. Me and Jared watched all of it. I know you're shocked that I watched all, even the weird and ancillary parts of a Typhoon property, but in this rare occasion, it happened. So we touch a little bit upon it in the episode, but yes, if you want to hear me talk and complain about, what they left out of the 6th movie, then listen to that podcast.
I mean, 7 movies is very impressive, so you guys must cover a lot of material. And my manga of the month this time around is Wakakozake. I think a lot of people have watched the anime or maybe heard of the anime, came out a few years ago.
Or just Pshoo.
Yeah. Pshoo! But now the manga is available a little more easily. It was sort of available prior to this, but now you can get, like, the full books, and it's just a really, like, nice moment series. It's very quick, but not like a 4-coma or something like that. You know, it's all about the food, and Wakako has this very simple way of approaching things. So I feel like it just gives you like a nice pshoo vibe when you read it.
Your heart will go pshoo. Ongoing investigations. What we've been reading, watching, and playing.
In our ongoing investigations this month, we are only going to talk about one thing because I think we're going to talk just like in general in the food for thought a little bit about, like, I think it's going to be a little longer than usual. And then there was a lot of new stuff that we covered. So, but I think this is a big one. A lot of people have seen it recently. It recently came out in theaters. It's...
Kate. It's not the Broly movie.
It doesn't come out till January.
Oh my gosh, because that would have been the one to talk about.
I mean, I think that would have been way popular, so good point.
So I mentioned it here, so you should put it in the tag.
Just in case. That's a good point. We did not see Brawley. We saw Mamoru Hosoda's new film, Mirai, or in Japanese, it's Mirai no Mirai. It is about... I want to talk about what I thought it was about and what it actually is about.
So it's not about Dear My Future, one of the insert songs from Penguin Drum.
I'm trying to figure out how the best way to approach this. Okay, I think we should talk about what the plot of the movie actually is, and then we will talk about our impressions or what we expected it to be about going in. Does that make sense?
So basically, you're going to give us what it is, what I thought I was going to get, what I actually got?
Yes.
So we're doing that meme picture.
As a podcast.
Excellent.
In fact, that would probably be an insanely popular podcast format.
Original idea. Do not steal.
This movie is about Kun-chan. He is 3 or 4?
Yeah, he's definitely not in elementary school yet.
Right. He's still at home. Maybe even 2 or 3, I guess, because maybe he'd be in preschool. I'm not sure, but... He is young enough to really just be at home with parents. And a new baby arrives, his little sister, Mirai. And Kun is not super happy about it. In typical sort of sibling fashion, the parents are obviously very distracted by a new baby who needs a certain amount of attention. And Kun is not used to that. So he starts to get jealous of his little sister.
And they're a little distracted also because Kun's mom is going back to work full time. And the dad is staying home to take care of both kids. And he's still also working from home. So, you know, both of his parents also just have, like, career shifts going on as well, which I think is, you know, very important.
And the grandmother, I think on his mom's side, can stop by, but she's, like, far enough away that she just visits. She's not, like, in the area to help, like, really take care of the kids.
She's, like, an emergency babysitter.
Kun is getting to know his little sister and also having sort of the mind of a child. There's a lot of imagination, but then also we're not totally sure, like, is it totally imaginary or are things really happening, because different people show up. And sort of if you've seen the poster of the movie, his little sister, who is a baby right now, shows up as a teenager. And she's like, you know, they go on like a little adventure. And Kun kind of meets different people from his family in different ways in these sort of imaginary / magical realism scenarios throughout the film. And eventually, spoilers, doesn't totally hate his little sister.
There is no, like, final battle with the baby stealer or something.
Yeah, it's a very sort of...
I wouldn't even say it's like slice of like segment of life. It's just like, here is almost like the first year of the baby being at the house. And that's about it. For better and for worse.
Like, honestly, it sounds like such a short, sparse plot description, but, like, that's really... Because beyond, like, well, we'll talk about some of the themes, I think, of the film, but plot-wise, like, that's it. That's, you know...
Yeah,
like,
it's much more, and we'll get into this also, but it's much more vignettes of a connected whole than a strong throughput.
So I just want to talk really briefly... No, probably not. I'm long-winded. But about what I thought this movie was, especially from sort of the
promotional,
like the material that was out there. So, and even the description, like the written description of this movie, makes it sound like it's about Mirai, the sister, and that somehow she is gonna go back in time and meet her older brother, but that older brother is a toddler. And that somehow there was like a story about why that happened, or like she has to save him or something.
Oh yeah, like one of our parents dies and I've come back to the past to prevent it, or I don't know.
Or something happens to Kun in the future, and, like, it's because of something that happens, you know, in this first year when I'm just born or whatever.
Doc Brown tells Mirai, your brother, he's an asshole in the future. You've got to stop him, Mirai.
And so, even if, now let's say we just, like, totally got it wrong, and it was like, no, it's about Kun, right? Mm-hmm. I feel as though the promotional material still implies that the teenage or older version of the sister is, like, a big, humongous part of this. Like, that is the story, is that the younger sister, who is, like, this future, her future self comes and, like, that is, and interacts with this, you know, the Kun as a child, and, like, that's, like, the story.
I will say, in the movie's defense, of all the people of his family that he meets, Mirai is the one he interacts the most with. So it's not like she only appears in the first 5 minutes and the last 10. But Kate is also right that there's probably more scenes with baby Mirai than there are with future Mirai.
She certainly, when she is there, she's playing a role, you know, it's not like she's insignificant, but I guess because there's no greater plot, like, her relevance to the story is just, like, not as great as one might assume it is from what you have seen about the movie, or what I have seen about the movie.
It's one of those movies where if it wasn't called Mirai no Mirai, you wouldn't be completely thrown off of, like, why isn't Mirai's name in the title?
If anything, I mean, I know that it's a play on words because Mirai also means future, so I know that. But yeah, like, just seeing that the name of this movie is Mirai, why wouldn't I think that it was about her? Because it's not about her. I mean, she's a baby. Her presence in the story is, you know, is significant to Kun's life.
Technically, in my opinion, back me up or make a correction, Kun and Mirai, I think, would be a better title for this movie because that is the more accurate. It's a lot about Kun. It's centers around a lot on Kun. Mirai is also important. So if they were both in the title, it would make a little more sense in that respect. Whereas, yeah, by just making it titled Mirai, you expect her to be in at least 60% of the film.
And I think this is my own personal bias for sure, but I feel like they definitely made the poster look very Girl Who Leapt Through Time. And so as a lover of Girl Who Leapt Through Time and also being, like, my opinion, his best film, it was like, ooh, like a little bit of, like, a return to that. And I feel like I felt a little tricked, honestly. About, like, what the story was going to be here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The dad is an architect, so the house is very, like, one of his projects. And there's, like, he has, like, an exposed courtyard that's built into the house. So that, and, like, there's, like, a bottom section and a top section and they're connected by the courtyard. And so whenever, and there's a tree in there, which is vaguely important to the end. But every time that Kun has, like, an emotional tribulation and he goes through that courtyard, he either, say, runs into the family dog who has an anthropomorphic version there, or runs into Mirai from the future, or travels to the past to see one of his relatives. And, yeah, he'll interact with that person in this fantastical space, and then, and it'll play a part sometimes as a resolution, sometimes as a motivating factor.
Or like a lesson, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or, you know, kind of imbues him with some knowledge, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't want to say lesson because sometimes it's just a spark of a story as opposed to other times, yeah, it's something that imparts like a little bit of wisdom. And then, yeah, that vignette ends. And some of the vignettes are slightly connected, but other of them are, like, him learning to ride a bike and being frustrated about it. And then he, either imaginarily or in real life, and he'll have an interaction which helps him learn to ride the bike. That has nothing really to do with any of the other stories. It's just the bike riding story.
Right. I mean, there's, like you kind of said, it's sort of like vignettes about a child's life and sort of maybe the way a child thinks. I mean, the thing that I feel like I can both commend him and also be like, I did not enjoy, was that I think he really accurately kind of captures children at this age, but in so accurate that it's like, almost too real. Not like it's depressing or anything like that. It's definitely not, but it's definitely feels less like fantasy children, you know?
I mean, yeah, I was about to say, there's a reason that at times TV shows make children whimsical adults as opposed to what they actually are, which is uniquely, in both many good and many horrible ways, children. Because at times, you know, he has a very unique perspective and a very, you know, vibrant perspective. And other times, he is this shrieking, like, black hole of attention that can never be filled.
And it also, I think, accurately sort of portrays some of the frustrations of parents in these situations. And one of the things I did appreciate, I feel like there are a lot of things I appreciated about this movie, but I'll just say right now that I didn't really like this movie. Oh, on like a personal level, I didn't like it, but I think that it does a lot of things well. And one of the things I, like I said, that I do kind of commend it for is that the parents in here, I think it does a nice job of showing them as being flawed, but also showing that making mistakes is okay with your kids, and that will not destroy them for life. Like, they will, making small mistakes, obviously, like, doing something, like, incredibly neglectful, like, I don't feel like it's downplaying anything like that, but I think it is sort of imparting a little bit of wisdom to parents, maybe, about, like, your kids will be okay, and, like, you don't have to be a perfect parent for them to turn out that way, like, and be fine. And I do feel that that is worth telling parents and giving them a little bit of that, because especially if you read anything about sort of, like, mommy Instagram and just, like, the power of social media to make parents feel like they have to be perfect, otherwise, and be there all the time and, like, do everything right and always say the right thing and never get mad and, like, you know, that is not, one, it's, like, impossible, and two, it's, like, putting extra pressure on parents when it's already, like, an incredibly stressful job, especially when children are this young.
You're going to make mistakes, but the simple mistakes of a human will not hopefully produce a sociopath.
I guess we could argue that all forever, but, like, yeah, I do feel like, I don't think that this movie is saying, like, nothing. I'm not trying to say that you can't traumatize your children by doing bad things, but I think that the way it's portrayed in here is just, like, the basic normal mistakes that parents will make they're gonna be okay. Like, they'll be fine. It'll be okay. So I do feel like that comes through to me. And Hosoda talks about how, like, no big shocker here, but he wrote this movie after he had his second child or whatever it was. I forget what he said in the interview, but, like,
no, it was his second child because
because of the sibling rivalry thing. Yeah. And so, like, you know, this is very much inspired by him watching his own kids. And, like, you know, I think that that's fine, I guess. I mean, obviously, like, do whatever you want, but I don't think that, to me, it didn't come out as a really compelling film.
I think I enjoyed it more than you, which isn't super hard, but
it's not like I hated it, but yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
But I do feel that he really needed some kind of through line, some kind of more concrete obstacle or conflict, because there is always the big, I wish I had more attention from my parents. And so there's this baby person who I live in the house with, who I barely acknowledge as a sibling. How that relationship changes. But it feels like, I'm going to say a number, 7 vignettes that all have a similar theme and the same characters more than a complete story, which I think, you know, I read recently on Ogui Maniacs, he was talking about one of the things he liked about the movie was the ambiguity of, you know, because we've talked about it. Like, it's not entirely clear if all these little adventures in the courtyard are just him picking up on more than people realize when he has these kind of imaginary adventures, or is there something magical about that courtyard? And I think that you could still do that and play to that strength of the movie with a fixed story about, like, Mirai comes and she says that she has a, you know, a mission, and all of the things come to that mission at the end. Then Mirai goes back to the future after the mission is accomplished. And you could still wonder, was that just the story that Kun made up, or was an actual Mirai who came back to the future? I still think that you could tell that story and still have all those vignettes play into that overall story. And I think that would have really improved the movie, because it would have felt a little more whole. It would have felt a little more what it said on the tin. And I think that it would have made the sum of the parts interlock a little better than they do. And I think it would have just felt a little more satisfying.
I agree with everything you said, Al, because I think that, like, the movie doesn't really have, to me, it doesn't really have any stakes. So, but the thing is that I feel like you could argue, well, that's because, like, what are the stakes? Like, aren't the stakes pretty low for, like, a 2-year-old? I you know, like, the stakes are Kun doesn't like his little sister who's a baby, right? Or, like, Kun doesn't understand, like, the meaning of family, or how family interplays so much into who you are. Because I think that is definitely, like, a through theme of, like, your family are not just, like, adults in your life, but, like, they were other people, or, like, how they play into who you are. And, like, I don't think he necessarily takes away everything, you know, everything that you could from those. I feel like as an adult watching it, you take away more from those vignettes than Kun probably does. But there's, like, a theme, you know, about family. But I agree with you that I think that could have been accomplished while making it, like, more connected. And I don't care about, like, the thing for me is that I don't care about portraying children extremely realistically. Like, that is, like I said, I think that he did that competently, but on a personal level, like, that is not, like, what I'm trying to get out of it. And, like, I much more enjoy, like, films and books for children where the children, like, are way more competent, like, are competent, or, like, more competent than adults, or whatever. And like, it's fine with me. I don't care if it's not realistic.
And I still feel like you could have the mission from the future, quote-unquote, have some high stakes, and then just imply that you're not sure if they're real or not. Because I feel like he's old enough to at least make up his own stories, if you just want to view it as his imagination of, you know, there being Mirai comes back to tell me, because he's obsessed with trains, that if this mission doesn't succeed, the Japanese rail line will, you know, vanish or something. And, or, there's going to be a temporal paradox, and trains will never exist in Japan. And that way you could see it as actually happening, or you could just see it as, since Kun is so obsessed with trains, that's the story he'd make up for himself. And that would get a, because that last vignette.
Yes, go ahead, Al. I was about to say, yeah.
Like, tries to add stakes out of nowhere, but it really isn't.
But I feel like that's the most successful vignette. Mm-hmm. I mean, not success. I mean, successful in what we're talking about now. Mm-hmm. Successful in, like, teaching Kun something. I think other ones successfully do that. But kind of creating that, like,
tension.
Yes, tension. There's only tension in that one little bit at the end, essentially.
You're saying you weren't on the edge of your seat about if Kun would learn to ride a bike or not?
I can't say that I was.
Oh,
yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Cool.
But the thing is I'm trying to emphasize this, but I don't think that this was, like, a bad film. Mm-hmm. It's just, it wasn't a film for me. That's how I feel about it. I think he accomplished certainly what he wanted to do with it, and maybe that sounds like I'm making excuses or whatever, but, like, it's just not a movie that I really wanted to see. Like, it's not a story that really appeals to me that I'm
interested in. I think picking up Wonderland, that it feels very personal, even more than his other movies. And maybe to its detriment, a little too personal. Like, I think my roommate put it well. I think he should have abstracted it at a level or two. And I think that would have helped out the story a lot. I think there's going to be a certain person who really likes this movie because it is that, like, door to this person's life and their thoughts and their experiences. But I think both of us, to various degrees, would have liked it to kind of put those stories in a more traditional narrative frame.
Thank you, Al. I think that was, that was good. Like, I totally agree with that. And I think that the movie, you know, a movie doesn't necessarily have to reflect my own story, right? We all know this, for me to, like understand it. And I feel like I did understand the characters in this movie. I do think it's very interesting that the only named characters are children in this film. Like, all the adults are just, like, whatever their role is, mother, father, grandfather, whatever.
Because, Kun is like, yo, Hiroshi, what's up?
Yeah. So I think
could you call me dad? Yeah, all right, Hiroshi, next time, though.
And I just lie. I think it's so interesting that even in the credits, like, they have, like, and I think that's part of his idea of the movie is for it to be, like, universal. Like, oh, this is anybody's parents kind of a thing.
Or it's so centered from Kun's point of view.
Right, yes.
That, it, like, what else would they be called?
Right, because isn't there a part the part in the train station when they're like, what is your mother's name? He has no idea. Like, that's not even a concept to him yet of, like, wait, what do you mean? Like, her name is Mom? Like, yeah. And so I do think it is, like, an insanely personal story, and I do think, to me, that is a detriment. I've really kind of felt that, you know, Hosoda now, his last three films, not only is he the director, he is also the writer, and in my opinion, like, I don't think that has been successful. Like, in fact, I was just discussing this before I start, the other day, when I was talking about this movie, is that for me personally, I don't think I will probably see the next Hosoda film in the theater.
Do you think it's kind of like, you think it's like me and Yuasa, where he's a director, you much more enjoy adapting works? Because I feel like the story you liked the most was The Girl Who Left Through Time, which was an adaptation of a very famous...
It's inspired by...
But I feel like he's still got to work in somebody else's structure.
Well, he had... Somebody else wrote that film. Somebody else... Like, the woman who wrote The Girl Who Leapt Through Time also wrote Summer Wars, which I think are his best movies.
So what you're saying is more, he's a Tomino. He needs somebody to, like, kind of guide him towards the path of better movies.
And again, that's my personal opinion, because I know people who especially, like, love Wolf Children, which, again, I don't like that much. So, like, I'm saying this on a completely personal level, but to me, I think he works better when he's working with somebody else. And it feels like his films are becoming increasingly internal. And so, like, maybe he had just had to get so internal, because, like, where do you even go from this one to, like, more internal? So maybe now he can go back, I don't know, like, go back outward in some way?
In your defense, Kate, it's perfectly fair to be like, maybe I'll just wait to catch the next one on video. I mean, we get so much stuff. I feel like Hosoda is not some struggling writer that you've got to absolutely support or he's going to disappear. So, I mean, it's not like you're like, I will never watch one of his works again. It's just like, maybe I'll hold off and watch it in a theater unless, like, you know.
Yeah, I just feel like I'm no longer, like, benefit of the doubt. You know, I mean, that makes sense, right? Because, like, there's five movies, well, if we're not counting, like, One Piece or whatever, that, like, two I liked and the last three is, like, so, you know, that split is not so good for me. So, like, just going to take a step back, you know, wait for other people's opinions and whatnot for it personally.
I think I enjoy it enough to give him, I'll still go see him, but no, there's no shame in that game. That's a better use of your money, I think. This episode's food for thought. We should end the year with a very simple question we do every year. What are some things that you, both the audience and us, you will only hear our discussion, but we'd love to hear your answers for what did you enjoy that was not anime, manga, and we pretty much said video games. I mean, you guys can throw in some video games you like, but we're gonna skip video games from 2018. Listen to our song!
My baby, go! Cute, 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 sweet, sweet, cute, 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 Milahi. Mada nani hitotsu enakarete nai mashiro na sono gayoshi ni kagayaki dashita kimi no My baby, go! Cute, cute, marshmallow yoli. Cute, cute, madeleine yoli. Sweet, sweet, yawaraka na kuchibiru. Oh, baby! Cute, cute, kodori shite. Cute, cute, yubi o karame. Kimi no subete o kito. Boku ga mamotte ageru. My baby girl, cute, cute, warai goe mo, cute, cute, naki ga osae.
Cute.
What's your answer to the food for thought?
So, the question, once again, for everybody. So, make your answers on Twitter, or send us an email of what is your favorite non-anime and manga things of 2018. And we will just pick a few so we are not here all day.
I know. I could have like a really long list, so...
So I assume I can put in Fate Grand Order because it's experience more than a game.
Oh, is that so? Or it's like, it's a mobile,
mobile novel with some interactive portions.
It's an app. It's not a game. No, you can't.
I foiled again.
All right, so now pick a real thing.
So, you know what? It started the last year, but I only started watching it this year.
That counts.
Mostly in this year. Some of the better episodes were in this year. I've really been liking that DuckTales reboot.
Interesting.
I thought it was, it's really fun. You know, DuckTales, pretty much, I assume we mostly have older listeners, so, like, I think pretty much most of the people who listen probably watched the original DuckTales as a child, or at least are vaguely aware of it as part of their zeitgeist.
I mean, why? Do you just want to skip the really long plot explanation? Like, it's so huge.
I feel like
we'll be here for hours if we explain the plot of DuckTales.
I feel like there are very few people who would listen to this podcast who would actually even have to look up what the, like, original plot of DuckTales is. I mean, it's not like it's friggin' Quack Pack or something where you're like, no, I don't actually remember that.
Three nephews of Donald Duck go and hang out with his super rich uncle, Scrooge McDuck.
And they go on adventures. It itself was kind of a reimagining and updating of the original Donald Duck cartoons as part of the Disney Afternoon.
Oh, it was so good, you guys. That was when Disney stuff was just on, like, regular TV. You didn't have to have a cable subscription to watch that.
And as I said, it was like part of the zeitgeist. Once again, I would be surprised if, like, more than a quarter of our listeners had not at least watched some of it when it was on TV.
There was a movie in theaters.
And so recently, like everything, you know, the entertainment industry goes, what has worked in the past and how can we re-update it? And so they were like, DuckTales, people like that. So let's put that through the remake filter. But I feel like it's a clever show. They got, I think it's David Tennant, one of the old Doctor Who's, to do Scrooge McDuck, because he's actually Scottish. So they're like, we'll have a Scotsman play Scrooge McDuck this time. And, you know, they update a lot of the characters. They went out of their way to give Huey, Dewey, and Louie individual personalities, as opposed to three clones that only occasionally have separate personalities when individual episodes require it. They basically went, you know who was a successful female character? Mabel from Gravity Falls. You know who people disliked in DuckTales? Webby. Let's just make her Mabel. And so they did. On one hand, it kind of feels lazy. On the other hand, there are worse characters you could copy. There are so many worse characters you could copy. She's one of the better ones, so I guess it was a decent choice. And she's entertaining. And I think it's just a fun update. Once again, I feel to bring back Gravity Falls, a lot of the humor and story structure feels like they're like, you know what was successful? Gravity Falls. Let's use a lot of that formula. Because there's like a... Each season seems to have a meta plot that is, you know, in the background, and then a lot of one-off episodes where maybe a little bit of the one-off episodes will feed into it, and then, you know, some main storyline episodes, lots of little, like, Easter eggs all over the place, and just a lot of the timing of the humor seems very Gravity Falls-esque in that respect, and it's just a fun show. It feels like the good kind of remake where It's respectful to the original one, but it still has this very its own unique voice. Like, it definitely takes the characters in a lot of interesting directions. I know that, like, one of the things is Launchpad is a big fan of the Darkwing Duck TV show, which in this, like, new rebooted universe, Darkwing Duck is like a Adam West style old TV show, and Launchpad is a huge fan of it and, like, lives his life as if he could be like Drake Mallard from the Darkwing Duck TV show, which, you know, is a kind of a little homage to how he was put into the Darkwing Duck TV show that followed DuckTales. And then a lot of things like that. And I think it's just an entertaining show.
And it's not the type of remake where everything needs to be dark now or whatever. So not that I even can even imagine what that would be, but...
Well, Kate, they actually deal with Delia Duck, their mom, and like, what happened to her? That's the mystery.
Drug addict?
Yeah.
not that dark.
Heroin all the way. I don't want to spoil it because the main meta plot of there's actually two, but I'll save the other one. It does involve like a old villain that they've kind of updated as well, and those are separate plots.
So I was trying to decide what movie, because obviously we can't talk about everything we saw this year and whatnot. So, like, which movie was I going to pick? And I think I'm going Crazy Rich Asians. So this was a romantic comedy movie. It came out in the, like, late summer. And this was touted as not only, like, a big Hollywood production, but an all... Asian cast, whether they were from Singapore or other parts of Asia, because the story takes place in Singapore, or they're Asian American, just a very, like, robust cast of all Asian actors. I was also, like, a huge fan of this book, so it was really fun to see them adapt the book, because... if you haven't read the book is, like, significantly long. Like, it's like a 500-page book. So to sort of distill that down into this one movie seemed like a pretty big task. But there's a lot of, like, ancillary characters. So they, you know, stripped down a lot of that story. And, you know, they came up with, like, a great cast. Very funny. Has, like, the romance is really good. And, it was just, like, such a good feeling movie to go see, and it deals with, like, themes of family and also, like, kind of, like, class structure a little bit. And of course it's called Crazy Rich Asians, so, you know, the story is about Rachel, who lives in New York and is, like, a professor, and she's dating this guy, and he's like, hey, why don't you come home to come with me to Singapore to, like, visit my family and go to this wedding. And she's like, okay. And then she finds out that, like, his family is, like, incredibly rich, like, ridiculously so, and, like, all the baggage that sort of come, and the eccentricity that comes along with that. So that's, like, part of the drama, and also part of the humor is, like, how, like, absurdly wealthy these people are. And it was just, like, a really great movie. I haven't got to see it again yet, but I feel like I would watch it again. I think it had a really good emotional punch at the end. And it was different enough from the book, but I accepted the differences.
So I have a question, since you brought it up. Since they had to cut a bunch of characters, you know, because they wanted a easily digestible movie, you know, as opposed to, hey, you've got, like, I don't know, 5 hours, right? which character or plot line do you miss the most? Maybe not that it had to be in the book and was not, but like, which one you were like, ah, I really like that one.
Well, I think for me, my favorite character is Astrid, who is the main guy. His name is Nick. It's, like, one of his cousins. And her story in the book is, like, my favorite. I really like her. And the funny thing is, though, is that the book is way more absurd, like, of, like, stuff that happens and, like, how crazy everybody is, like, than the movie. So I feel like her story is very streamlined, and there's, like, certain aspects of it in the movie that I kind of liked, because, like, almost her attitude about what happens in her, she's married, like how, what happens in her relationship in the movie is like a lot different than the book. So I wouldn't say that I necessarily like extremely missed it, but it was very different. And, mm-hmm. and I kind of, I could see why they couldn't like fit in all of her story. I do feel like, you know, one of the strengths of the book, which I do think does come through in the movie thematically, but is just so much more significant in the book, is that it's not just like, oh, let us show all these rich people who are absurd about either like they're assholes or they're eccentric or like all of these things, like let us like voyeuristically look at them. I think that the book does an amazing job of showing how wealth changes people, but changes them individually. So like no one in the book is the same, even though the cast is gigantic, like wealth affects every one of them differently. And so it's not just, oh, you become rich and then you, like, become like this. It's, like, what else about you and, like, how other people, like, approach wealth, I think is, like, a really interesting part of the series. Yeah. But the book is, like, if you liked the movie, I think, I don't even know if you would like the book. I think you would still like the book, but the book is, like, such a delicious soap opera, ridiculous stuff in there that I loved. It was like almost like campier because it's so crazy. Although the guy who writes them, Kevin Kwan, like says that they are loosely based on things that he saw happen, like because I think he comes from a semi-wealthy family in Singapore. So it's like supposedly it's like, oh no, I saw way crazier things than even that's like in these books. But you know, like what, who knows if how true that is.
So I'm going to go in an unexpected route and once again talk about something that was given to me at the very end of December. But
Wait, you haven't got it? Oh, last year. I was like, Al, this isn't Mirai no Mirai. We are not from the future.
So yeah, I'm going to call it a little girl from the future who is now an adult came back, gave me a great gift. That's amazing. Changed my life.
Wow, that is a good story. I mean, I think that's a decent pick for this, for sure.
But no. So my brother got a deal and got a bunch of people in the family the same gift. A bunch of people in the family, Fitbits. I think it's actually really interesting that, you know, there's been a lot I've just read about and just experienced myself about gamification of if you make something a game or something that you can track there's a tendency for you to become more engaged with it. And like a lot of the extra credits videos, that can be used for good and evil, and sometimes a mixture of a little bit of both of them. But I feel like, as someone who was never super motivated to do a lot of exercise, like, the thing that I think with the Fitbit that it really helps is it, A, visualizes stuff that you don't think about, and B, it gives you very discrete goals that you can kind of, well, if I just, you know, like, if they did these little free health tests at work, and one of the suggestions that they gave everybody after the, you know, if you had, you know, maybe you should go and instead of taking the elevator all the way to your floor, get out 5 floors earlier and walk up so you get at least a little bit of stair climbing in your day. And, you know. And, yeah, it kind of, but if you have a little thing that tells you, oh, you've, climbed, you know, 5 flights of steps today, maybe you can make that 10, or, ah, you've walked 10,000 steps, maybe, you know, you could, you know, go around the park once before you go home and push that up to 15. I think that, it really helped me be a little more physically active, and I think, like now I walk to a further train station just to get home. And it doesn't really add that much time to my day because instead of taking the local train, I walk to the express train. And so maybe I get home 10 minutes later, but you know, I get a little more exercise and it's a nifty little thing. It's not going to work for everybody. I think that once again, You have to be the kind of person that gamification kind of engages with you. But if you are, I think it does help you be a little more active, which I like. And it's also, I think one of the other things is, since it's also just a watch that I can wear and it gives me the time, I'm more willing to put up with it. Just have it all the time, which I think, you know, it helps counteract the other problem, which is, you know, the New Year's resolution. Like, you're like, I'm going to be more healthy and I'm going to get a gym membership like so many people do at the beginning of the year. And you do it and you go for a month or two and then shit in your life happens because that's everybody's life. And, you know, you have to go into the job a few extra hours a day or something comes up with a loved one and you stop going to the gym and because, you know, it's something out of your way and, you know, you've got to make a cut to your time somewhere. And but if it's just something that just you add a little bit to your routine, not go out of your way, I feel like it helps a little bit. And I think it's a little thing that has affected my life the whole year.
That's really cool. I knew you had one, but that's cool to hear that it's been so useful to you. Do you feel like, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners don't know this, but do you feel like it's affected your running at all?
I feel like I'm a little more consistent when I do my weekend runs. And if I'm ever late for the train and I rush the block and a half to get up to the train, I am not dead and have to like take 10 minutes to regain my breath. I'm merely tired.
You're not completely winded.
Also, I found out randomly today that just to add to this discussion, there is a thing called a smart condom that you can wear and it will count how long.
Oh my God, what?
And, like, the rate at which you do activities.
But I have so many questions.
Oh, and the worst part of it all is it encourages you to share the information that it records with your friends and family. And that, like, the person who was talking about it went on a whole bunch of jokes of, like, you know, your grandma being like, I'm disappointed with this score.
Oh, God. Okay. But, what? It's got, like, never mind. I don't actually want to know any answer to any of the questions that are in my brain.
I think I've run it up. I think everybody's had a good laugh. They will come to their own horrible conclusions past this point. I found out today that these exist.
You had to share it with somebody.
Yes.
Got it. Okay, well, in a completely different direction. Of course, most people know that I'm a big, big reader. And, of course, I also enjoy mysteries and detectives. And I have to pick the nonfiction book, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, by Michelle McNamara, came out this year. It is her quest. She was a writer, amateur detective, who became obsessed with, who would go on to become called the Golden State Killer. Serial killer, serial rapist. I will try to not go into extreme detail in my discussion of this book, but definitely not a book that if you have any sort of fears about that stuff. Also, I have all these fears. But it's a very intense read, especially because this man was active for about 40 years, and he had never been caught. This was a cold case. She actually gave him the name the Golden State Killer because he actually had many, many names because his crimes escalated. So he was, like, first he was a serial home invader. Then he was the East Area Rapist, who terrified California neighborhoods. And eventually it escalated to, murder. So, it was kind of one of the biggest unsolved cases And Michelle, yeah, became obsessed with it, and she did a lot of research, and she actually started working with people who were working on this cold case. The, like, prime investigator for the last 20 years was Paul Holes, and she's, like, you know... just becomes so involved in trying to figure this out, like, that there has to be an answer, that, like, everybody deserves an answer. I'm trying to remember the victim number. I think it's, like, definitely over 50, if we're including the non-murder cases. And there's probably, like, a lot of unreported things, and also crimes that they still don't realize are this same guy. So it's, like, a pretty terrifying read. And actually, the title of this book is something a victim, that he said to a victim, because he really liked to toy with people and sneak around and, like, make them think that he had left the house and that he was still there. And so it's actually, you know, she goes into, like, a lot of different case details, because there's a lot of times where he almost gets caught. So there's all these interesting, like, encounters with him and, like, different descriptions of him, and just, like, why can't we, like, figure out who this is, and moving around a little bit in California, not, like, significantly, but, like, you know, being in one area for a while and then kind of, like, going somewhere else. And I actually wasn't going to read this book. I knew it was coming out, and sadly, Michelle passed away before, like, the book was completed, before her research was completed, and her husband and a couple other researchers, like, finished the book for her. But I wasn't going to read this book because I know about the case, and it's, like, such a terrifying case. But while they were actually on tour for this book this year, he was caught. And, like, what better, like, a most amazing ending to this story? Like, I couldn't read it knowing that
they were still out there.
Yeah, I mean, just so scary. One of the scariest cases, definitely. And so I was like, I couldn't do it. And then when I found out, like, when that happened, it's just, like, so incredible that, like, a lot of that research, you know, Paul Holes, like, definitely credits her partially, like, for helping in the investigation to, like, bring this to light and, like, bring funding towards it, because people were just, like, not concerned about it. And so the team really, like, it's such a terrifying story. It's so good. Like, her research is so good. And it just talks about how, like, she really paints it about the victims. Like, I think she does such a good job of not, like, over, like, glorifying this serial killer, but, like, making it, like, a portrait of, like, people and neighborhoods and, like, what it must have been like in the 70s to, like, have this happening all over the place, and, like, clearly, like, how he, you know, would case a neighborhood, like, how he was doing all this stuff. So, and, like, her theories about it, and just to have, like, that satisfying conclusion that, like, he was still alive, he gets caught, they use DNA evidence to prove, like, he is definitely that. And then, like, that part of the case is super interesting, too, because it happened because of, like, all these DNA ancestry sites where people are putting their DNA up, like, that's actually how they figure partially, like, got close to, like, okay, he must be, like, in this family line and stuff like that, is because of those websites. And just obviously the continued pursuit of DNA evidence. And then also, I mean, I just know that this is going to become a movie I just feel it, because also, so Paul Holes, the investigator, he's very awesome. If you ever, like, see any interviews with him, he also actually is putting out a podcast right now about the final days of the, like, investigation for this case, because he's now retired. But, like, it was, like, 2 days before he was gonna retire, he, like, you know, it's, like, just classic movie scenario, but it actually happened, you know? So, really good. And, of course, this only just came to light this year, so no trial, you know, no trial set. Still, like, a lot to find out about it. And I think, unfortunately, at least according to, like, Paul Holes and a few other people in the investigation, they don't feel like he's going to talk. He's very old at this point, but it doesn't seem like he's really going to, like, oh, well, here are all the other, like, because there's definitely ones they don't know about. But it doesn't seem like he is going to really open up about that.
He isn't like one of those guys who wants like his name in history and here's all that I've done.
I mean, I feel like he must in some sense, but I guess not. Like, the thing is, oh, well, I didn't reveal the most important thing, is that he was a cop. So he, I think it's because he's sort of more aware of the law, like, that he is a little more savvy about it. And so, he was a cop, though, like, at least the primary portion of his crimes. So... which is, you know, why he evaded things so long. But there's a lot of questions. Like, once you have that bit of information, going back and, like, looking at all the stuff is, like, why wouldn't you think that? Like, it, of course it was. Like, there's certain things that, like, it could have only been. Like, So unfortunately it sounds like, you know, for maybe a lot of, maybe people that are missing and, like, other parts that they haven't connected to him, we don't know if we'll ever get anything from that. But... he's in jail. Hopefully there will be a trial that we will get to see and he won't die beforehand or something. Just an amazing case and an amazing book about the case.
So I think we'll end on something we both started watching independently from each other.
And less terrifying than what I just talked about.
I don't know, Kate. Which is The Good Place. I know I got into it because my roommate, his old buddy from college, was like, yo, you've got to watch this show. It's really good. And I think it's right up your alley. And so he was just watching it in the living room. And it's funny. I had just read an article that was like, the ending of the first season is amazing. And here's the crazy twist. And so I read that article because I didn't think I was going to watch the series anytime soon. And then, like, unrelated to that, my roommate just turns on the show. And then I just started watching partially just to, like, now that I know that there's a twist and what it is, let me now just watch my roommate and see if he, like, is going to pick up on it and, like, what is he getting and isn't getting from the show. And it's just generally entertaining. So it wasn't like I was, you know, suffering through, you know, garbage just to see someone's reaction. Not that I've ever done that before.
No, never. You would never. And then I started watching it mostly just because I had heard various people just in random, like, no one particularly, like, close to me, but just, like, people are like, oh, well, as you know, The Good Place is the best show or whatever. And it's like, what? What? Okay. And it was on Netflix. So, like, if it hadn't been on there, I don't think I would have, like, oh, I'm going to go out of my way to, like, figure out how to access this show. But it was there and I had just heard it, you know, kind of like earworm. And,
I think, yeah, it's also, I
started watching. And we almost started watching, like, around the same time.
I think when we finished the first season, you, like, basically, like, once again, like, 3 days later, independently started. And then we were like, you were like, hey, have you guys heard about this Good Place show? And we were like, yeah, we just finished that Good Place show.
It was so weird. It was just destiny for us all to watch it. And so if you haven't seen it and are curious about it, it's about, it's about being dead. And it's about, you know, the good place, heaven. Like, but the thing is that our main character is Eleanor. And she has arrived at the good place. And, you know, it's great. And it has, like, all the stuff you could possibly want.
And frozen yogurt for some reason.
And, you know, you have, like, your, like, there's, like, a Siri of the neighborhood, you know, Janet, who can get you anything, answer any question, like, do whatever. And you can do whatever. And you also have a soulmate. And, you know, like, it's just, like, paradise, essentially. But Eleanor is like, oh, I'm here, but they think that I am a different me. So Eleanor
same name, but
not a good record of being good enough to be in a good place called the good place, maybe. Like, how good do you have to be in the good place? So there's sort of a Like, it's a comedy, but it's also, I feel like it does bring up, like, a lot of interesting questions about morality.
Yeah, I was about to say, I've been, like, on a bit of a philosophy kick. I've just been, like, reading and watching stuff about philosophy since I've been about 3 or 4 years ago. And, man, if you are any kind of philosophy fan or, like, man, I wish I had a show that would take advantage of my philosophy degree. The Good Place is it. Because they really like to play with different, moral philosophers and just generally philosophical theory in general.
And it's amazing that how well they can weave that with the comedy because, I mean, there's a joke in the story of, like, everyone hates moral philosophy professors. Like, and so you can just sort of imagine that if it was about philosophy that you'd be like, all right, cool, I'm out. Thank you very much. But
you mean
so,
I'm in.
Like, it's so balanced with the comedy. It's, like, because each character, you know, we have Eleanor, and she is not supposed to be there, and she's also like, I'm gonna become good. And so, like, just also that sort of, like, concept of, like, can you become good? And, like, and then the other people involved are, like, without, I feel like, you know, there is, like, as Al said, there's a bit of a twist, so we definitely want to avoid mentioning what that is, but I do really think that the main four characters of this story, Chidi, Eleanor, Tahani, and Janyu, are all, like, there aren't main characters, but their personalities are basically, like, kind of the four different morality, or, like, different spectrums of morality, which I can't really go into very much without, again, like, spoiling some things about, especially about the first season. So, but they're such interesting characters, especially when they're interacting with each other. And then when you, like, layer that on top of, like, philosophical inquiry, it's just very, it's super interesting.
And I think it's worth mentioning, even though I think we've kind of already touched on it, it is a very funny show. It is, like, I think there's usually at least one laugh out loud moment and a lot of, like, really good in every...
It's very snappy.
Mm-hmm. Because I feel like you could be like, oh, you know, I feel like it could come off as, oh, it's a very dry show with a few, like, British...
No way, yeah. It's definitely a much more... It's a sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's definitely coming at it more from a humorous perspective than, like, a serious moral philosophy perspective.
But I feel like the moral philosophy is pretty baked in there. It's just kind of in, like, a very digestible form. And part of that is from the premise of the show that, you know, Eleanor is just such a scumbag human being. Like, even her original reason to become good is just so she doesn't get kicked out. And Chidi is like, you're not really
wanting to be good.
You're just wanting not to be punished, which is different.
And, like, and, yeah, not be punished or just not get what she wants.
Mm.
No, it's... I feel like I want to do a deeper dive to talk about this, but we can't do it here because it, like, involves so many spoilers, but there's so many interesting things about how every character evolves. I also really love all interactions between, like, Janet, the not robot, don't call her a robot, not a girl either. I think she, that actress, and, like, her humor gets better every episode. I think she gets, like, better.
I won't spoil anything because you haven't seen any of the third season. There is an episode you will definitely enjoy in the third season.
I'm so excited for that. And then the other character that we haven't mentioned yet is Michael, who is played by Ted Danson and is the architect of this neighborhood in The Good Place. So he's sort of, like, running things. And, you know, like, his role is, like, sort of mysterious, but he's, like, he's almost like the I think it was, like, the camp counselor of, like...
Because, yeah, she's supposed to be, like, this angelic being, like, far beyond the understanding and power of a human, thereby, you know, the kindly shepherd that watches over them.
I also want to mention that even though I said it's a sitcom, it's also cumulative.
Mm-hmm.
There are plot points and, like we said, spoilers and things, you know, things evolve.
Yeah, and I feel like every season kind of has a slightly different dynamic, which I feel... I don't mind spoiling because I feel it is a reassurance that there will be progress and that you can wonder where it's going to go if it stays in the same track. And I just want to reassure people that the show realizes that the tracks that sometimes it's in are limited and has contingencies for that.
So everybody, check out The Good Place. I'm hoping that I can watch the third season over like this holiday time and just like kind of binge it. So I'm sure Al and I will have a lot to talk about. And if you haven't watched The Good Place yet, I can confirm that all the people who I just heard randomly talking about it were totally right. So yeah.
And if you watch it, I'm sure you get a lot of points to get into The Good Place. The most fascinating news and conversations from this month.
So, right at the end of the year here, there seems to be a lot of changes in streaming or digital platforms. We have a lot of news kind of coming all at once. And one of the biggest, I think the big announcement, which I'm still trying to wrap my head around, is that the US version of Weekly Shonen Jump is now going to be free. So currently it's a subscription online magazine. You get it every week, just like in Japan. It also is simultaneous with Japan. So, you know, One Piece, My Hero Academia, yada, yada. It's all coming out at the same time.
Isn't yada, yada about to get canceled?
That one is not really popular. Now it's going to be free for everybody. They're discontinuing subscription for the magazine. And the latest chapter will be day and date still with Japan. And you'll also be able to read the two or three previous chapters for free of, you know, current titles. So the other portion of that is that if you do have a subscription, like I have a yearly subscription, or you want to be a subscriber, what you'll now be getting is a back catalog. So that is kind of what we've seen some of these services, like in
Crunchyroll manga is like that.
Crunchyroll manga is like that. And then also, like, you know, like Comixology has like, or Marvel has like that unlimited, where you're not buying it, you're just subscribing so that you can read sort of stream manga kind of thing, or stream comics. So, or like how, you know, Netflix or whatever, you know, you're not paying that subscription to buy things or like keep it forever. You're just paying to access it. So that's now what you would be doing for Viz. And it's cheaper. Like it's like $2 a month. And I think there's probably, as with all things, like if you subscribe for a year, it's cheaper or whatnot. So what do we think of this? Wow. Free Shonen Jump.
I think it's interesting. I think people have always wished for an a la carte model, but the question has been, you know, A, are the companies ready to do that? And B, is it viable?
How do you mean an a la carte?
Well, that you can basically get what you, kind of like you said with the Netflix, you can read what you want. And that's kind of what you're getting with the subscription now. You can now just read any of the Shonen Jump titles that they have in the archives. So, you know, if you still want Slam Dunk, you still got to go and either buy those digitally or...
No, Slam Dunk was real. Didn't it come out in English?
Oh, it's even the older. I thought it was just stuff.
No. So it says, okay, so unclear. Good question, Al, because I think that's not quite clear yet, because it says you're going to have access to 10,000 chapters
of
Shonen Jump manga that has been released in English. And so it's a little unclear if that means, like, everything under the Shonen Jump brand you will have access to, or only stuff that ran in the digital magazine. I'm thinking it's everything. But you could be completely right.
Yeah, I thought it was everything that was just in the digital magazine. I could be wrong as well, but that was how I was interpreting it, which made the most sense to me. But you might be right, like Slam Dunk was never in there, but you get it for the $2 a month. I thought it was just, you know, like stuff like Dragon Ball, One Piece, Bleach, Naruto.
I mean, I think we don't know. I think that's an excellent... I mean, I think your interpretation is just as valid as my interpretation. I think, you know, it's gonna... Well, we're gonna find out very soon. This is happening December 17th, so I'll know immediately because my subscription switches over to this thing, so I will report back.
I mean, I think the idea, once again, is that where they're really making the profit is people buying the digital books or the physical books. So, and the problem, once again, is always you're competing with all the scanlation sites. So might as well give away the weekly chapters for free and then hope that people buy the stuff that they like, you know, either digitally or through physical books, since that was what you were hoping for the most.
In that case, too, I didn't think of that, Al, that, like, they don't really make money on the magazine. Like, the magazine is just out there to, like, even in Japan, It's kind of just out there to be circulated. It's very cheap to buy, I guess. I mean, it's not going to be free in Japan, so, like, whatever. I think that is still interesting. But I do wonder, I mean, they said specifically, I think, that they're doing this to help combat piracy. I think that was in, like, the FAQ about this. My kind of question about that is, so if you're not a Shonen Jump reader or, you know, not, like, a big follower of Shonen Jump, you might not know this, but Shonen Jump is leaked in Japan, like, 3 or 4 or 5 days before the magazine actually comes out, and scanlators get... So scanlators essentially have the magazine early. So they're not going to have it at that time. So I'm just curious, like, how much... I'm not saying this won't help piracy. Like, if I think that it will. I'm just curious to know, like, how much. Like, are people going to be like, well, too bad. Like, they still have it, like, almost a week before this actually comes out. So that's what I'm going to stick to. Is it an... Like, how much are people willing to wait for, like... the access kind of a thing.
I, you know what I think a lot of it actually comes down to? And it's sad, but it's true. And someone correct me. This is just our speculation. It comes down to EPIN. Because I feel like what killed so much of the scanlation thing was when you could easily watch the legit subtitled version of anime, the EPIN on the fan subs went down dramatically, and that's why you don't see that many groups other than, like, weird groups that just repackage the already translated subs. So I'm wondering how much prestige there will be in getting those titles out. And if that kind of drops off, I feel like that's more than anything I think that would kill. If basically people don't feel as praised and, like, get the, literally the EPIN from it, I feel like they'll drop off and they'll just go to titles that they can get that kind of pat on the back for. So, you know, still your prestige Kodansha titles and stuff like that can get you that. I just wonder if nobody is congratulating a lot of these people for doing their jump work, they just might move on to other titles.
That's a really interesting point. And I don't know if we've brought it up on here, but I really don't understand why they cannot fix this leak. It's been so long, like years. I mean, does fucking Moriarty himself run this manga piracy ring in Japan? Like, how many people could there possibly be that that they cannot figure it out?
Kate, he's the Napoleon of crime.
I mean, I just don't understand. It just seems like it would not be that hard to fix, but apparently black ops, like, high-level people, the KGB, like, is all in on this. Like,
Putin must read his ones.
I was like, what's going on? But I'm not sure yet for myself if I'm interested in this back catalog option. So, to Al's, because of your excellent point, is, like, if it's just, like, the back catalog of what's been running in the magazine, I don't really need it. If it's their entire Shonen Jump catalog, period, that is very attractive to me, and I would love to do that, and I would hope that that might be some sort of, like, they're, like, testing the waters of doing, like, a big subscription for, say, all of Viz manga as, like, more, you know, more money than $2, like, I don't know, $5 or whatever.
Hayate, on demand, anytime.
The thing is, like, oh, if you said that Detective Conan was, like, okay, thank you, I will take that. Or, like, all their shoujo library, like, yes, please.
And then, of course, the dream that will never come, they could like, make it $5 a month, and you get Shonen Jump and Shonen Sunday, though.
Well, see, that would have to be free, because that doesn't...
Right, right.
There's no subscription for the magazine anymore. It's just not a thing. I'm very curious to see if this back catalog thing is, like, viable for them. I'm sure we won't know until it's canceled or not canceled. I mean, that's not like they're going to be like, the numbers are so low. Yeah, I was just thinking about...
Oh, hey, Kei Mamukio Takahashi's new series is coming out. Why can't they throw that baby on there?
They could. I mean, I do think that this does... I mean, they already do a lot of free chapters of stuff. I think it is possible. I feel like it does open up the option of them doing more simulpub because they're doing it for, you know, putting it up for free, and therefore, like, they are trying to combat this thing. I don't know. Maybe.
Well, yeah, I feel like... Jump is their flagship, so that anything they're going to try with that, and then if it works, move on to the less prestige stuff, and if it doesn't, then bury it and forget that it ever happened.
Yes, basically yes. Good point. See, okay, I just want to clarify the language used here is... More than 10,000 manga chapters that Viz Media previously released in English. So I feel like that is vague.
So, but is it 8,000 of that One Piece, Naruto, and right? Dragon
like,
Ball?
You think 10,000 sounds like a lot, but is it? I mean, yes, it is. It's a lot. One Piece isn't up to 1,000 chapters yet, so... Considering how long it is, therefore, all other things fail in comparison, essentially. Yeah, I think it's a sort of a to-be-continued sort of discussion, because I think it has a lot of potential. I am excited for everybody to be able to read and date with the magazine, and that I get to continue to do so. I don't get to feel special, but, you know, whatever. I don't care about that. And, you know, I'm not 100% certain that I need this back catalog thing.
Yeah, you'll see what's in there. If you're reading Saint Seiya or not.
Yes, actually. Wow, you read my mind, Al. I was like, oh man, I can go back and read all of this. That was the first thing that popped into my head. So I was like, that would be great. So now I'm hardening my heart against such hopes.
So yes, your $2 mainly dependent. Do I learn the... Can I go back and read the Adventures of St. Pegasus or not?
And it would be nice to, like, I do own a lot of Shonen Jump manga, but like all people and manga readers, it's like, oh, but those are a lot of books. And if all of those books can just be in a magic place where I can read them over again... I'm very interested in rereading D. Gray Man, so, like, I could pull out all the books, but, you know. I think it's exciting for everybody. I hope everybody checks it out, you know, like, I hope they get the word out. That's the other thing, of course, that's always the problem with these just streaming /, you know, initiatives. I gotta make sure people know that they can go and do this.
You know, it's a weird, unimportant question that just popped into my mind. But I will ask it anyway. What about weird titles like The Gray Man and Claymore that started in Jump and then jumped to other, like, Ultra Jump type magazines?
They gotta give it to me, Al. No! All excellent questions. If only we had a Viz, we could just call them up, ask them a few things.
Because, like, would you only be able to read up to Stone Ocean? of JoJo's, or would you be able to read Steel Ball Run? Because that's the switchover from Jump to Ultra Jump.
Well, they haven't actually licensed that. So, you know, like, the furthest they've licensed is through Part 4. So, like, but yeah, is JoJo's Parts 1, 2, and 3 a part of this?
I think it would make it a stronger contender.
That's what I'm saying. I also like the idea of them doing a simulpub for JoJo's chapters or whatever. I just want to give them a lot of work. Can you just do, like, way more work?
I really want to skip ahead to JoJolion, so could you guys put that in there? Thanks a lot. Your friend Kate. Speaking about streaming services and changes, there have been a lot of changes in streaming anime. We have had two of the biggest, I'd say, people in the anime licensing business basically change partnerships completely. Because earlier in the year, but not that much earlier, Funimation said, "Sorry, Crunchyroll, we're getting a divorce." And we're taking all our titles and we're moving out. Like that episode of Seinfeld when the super popular couple breaks up. Sentai was like, "Hey, Crunchyroll, I hear Funimation broke up with you. And you're single. Why don't we start dating?" And so now, slowly but surely, as all the Funimation titles leave, you see more and more High Dive.
And High Dive is joining, you know, Verve. There's just too many names of things, basically, but essentially Verve, it's like the web ring of streaming services. Like, it's a streaming service that has a bunch of streaming services attached to it.
I was about to say, so it's like, it's Nickelodeon cartoons, it's Crunchyroll, it's somebody's Ranma fan page. I get it, it's a web ring.
Yeah, I mean, it is weird, right? Like, it's not just me that thinks it's weird that it's what do you call it? Like, it's like a streaming aggregator, like, and they have added High Dive into their lineup so you can pay a flat fee and get a whole bunch of streaming services as opposed to all, but you can also subscribe to those services individually, which is not confusing at all. And so High Dive is now a part of that, and there's like some special introductory pricing that you can get for Verve right now. The really confusing part is like, if you are already a Crunchyroll subscriber, which many of us are, it's like you can't then sort of get some sort of discount on getting all of Verve. So it's just like they have not figured out how to do that yet.
Yeah, because I was talking to Pats, and I think you were there, at Anime NYC. We were just, you know, shooting the breeze while we were in the dealer's room, and he mentioned that the page very specifically is worded like they want to do that. They want to be able to get it over, but they haven't figured it out because it's, you know, all these different services, and I think it's finding a way to get them all to communicate so that you can update to, you're basically upgrade to the Verve service. And I don't think, and then once again, as we've seen with anything related to Crunchyroll, they are not the quickest in doing anything that is necessary. So,
at least not with their, you know, their technology is not the best. Yeah, so that team up has happened. And that was also, remember, that was also post Amazon Sentai breakup also. So,
and then also like that, what do you call it, that Seinfeld episode. Now that, what do you call it, Crunchyroll and Funimation are broken up, who swiped in for the other part? You know, High Dive is Jerry, and I assume Elaine is Hulu in this analogy. You can figure it out for yourself.
So, yeah, now we have, confirmation that Funimation titles are going to be now back on Hulu. I mean, Hulu has been showing, you know, had anime for a while, and it's kind of like gone up and down with, like, how much they've had and who they've been shacking up with. But yeah, so now we're just like swapping. And so, all right, like here we are again. And part of this stems from Funimation being bought by Sony last year. And the Crunchyroll deal with Funimation lasted about 2 years. So I'm sure that was like all that they had a contract for. And then now that they're bought by somebody else, they have other plans for them. And it's also, you know, it's going to have subs and dubs. So like, I guess, does Funimation still have their own platform, or that is like not?
No, they still do.
They still do. It's just really confusing that everything has, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people, I guess, already have a Hulu subscription, so this is worthwhile to them. But, you know, like, one of the things that everybody hates about Hulu is that there's, like, still ads. Like,
even when you get the super spanky premium version, yeah.
Yeah, whereas most other streaming services, you can get rid of those. So, like, I don't know, whatever. You know, I don't think I will be, I'm not a Hulu subscriber. I'm not going to become one to watch stuff from them. I'm more interested in like the high dive, crunchy team up, so, than anything else, I think.
I think the real question is, Kate, will I still be able to watch A Certain Magical Index Part 3 on Crunchyroll? So far, the answer is yes.
I mean, that's the other thing, too, is like, even though there's these different services, a lot of shows end up on all of them, so which is great for fans. I don't understand it on like the back end, but it's not, you know, it's not always so clear cut. Oh, this one is now like not with like on Crunchyroll, so like now they won't have that show. It's like, nope, not necessarily. We don't know until they tell us.
Yeah, because I remember Index started late this season. Like, I couldn't watch, like, the first few episodes for, like, the first week or two. And then eventually, yeah, they ironed everything out, and then I was able to watch Index. That was already in this weird limbo for a while. So I wonder if we're going to see that with other shows until everything is settled out, how it's going to settle out.
But even in this article, it says, like, Hulu already streams big titles like Tokyo Ghoul, Attack on Titan, and My Hero Academia. So, like, what does them having a partnership, like, what does that even gain anyone? I just don't fully understand. It just seems like a PR thing, and, like, what does it mean to anybody? I don't know. So, speaking of anime streaming, because apparently we'll just never have enough of it at this point, which I think is an overall gain for us, but TMS has announced that they are launching two channels in the U.S. for anime. And once again, like, so they're not launching one. They need to launch two, because one of them is kids and one of them is just regular anime. Why they need to do it in this fashion? I guess because maybe then it's easier for parents.
I do like how there are some titles that are on both, but only some.
I just, it's just a little bit confusing. And the other thing that I was trying to say, I remember Alan was trying to like discuss this, and I was like, I don't know what to call this. Is it an app? It's just a thing that you watch stuff on, because so it's only available on Apple TV, Fire TV, and Roku devices. So I don't know like what that means for like, I guess it's just because you would think that if it was on Apple TV, that's an OS, so that there would be an app that you could like have on your phone, but I guess not. Like, I don't know, but it says specifically those three things only. So if you don't have one of those, is it like a DVR? What is that? Like a Roku?
So the Roku is kind of like one of those like Apple like those sticks, but you can also get them in TVs. Because the TV my roommate just bought has a Roku built into it.
So it's a special thing that you need to stream things?
So it's a stick, like kind of like an Apple TV or a Fire Stick, that you can put in to take a regular TV that has an HDMI port and make it basically a smart TV. Because my parents just stopped. They had a cable package that had internet and TV. And my dad was mad at the cable company, so we just downgraded to just having internet. My mom was the one who suffered the most from this because she didn't have, because she watched regular TV. So my sister was subscribed to Drama Addicts, and they sent her a Roku as part of the deal. And so she plugs the Roku into my mom and dad's TV in their bedroom, and it lets them watch a certain amount of streaming stuff.
So it's a thing that allows you to stream on your TV without, like, hooking your TV up to a computer.
Yes.
Okay. But, so it has its own special apps that then cannot be... Like, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no.
Like, so there's a Hulu app, but it's only for Roku or something.
Yeah, and they have, like, all the major channels. So they have, like, an ABC and an NBC app. And so you can watch certain ABC and NBC shows through that app.
Okay. I still don't understand anything, but I don't want to talk about this anymore. So there are two channels from TMS. They have what I can only describe as an incredibly random assortment of shows on each of them. Like, is there any rhyme or reason to this?
I feel like it does seem like a... All right, let's pick, like, 8 shows that are completely different from each other and see which one of these stick to determine which ones we should put more on.
Yeah, like, I feel like, I guess the kid... All right, let me give them a little credit. Like, I feel as though the kids' channel seems fine. You know, like, that like, feels like it makes sense. We have Bananya, Galaxy High School, Monster Rancher, Sherlock Hounds, Sonic X. It's like, okay... Oh, I see. So the kids channel features dubbed only anime, and the regular anime channel has subtitled anime. So that is a difference. But like the regular anime channel is actually I have no idea what that is. Bananya Brave 10.
If I remember, just like when we were looking at this, I think it's some harem show.
Okay. Godmars, which is like the most random for sure on this list. I mean, I was kind of excited when I saw that, but really don't know how they decided that.
Kate, I know what it is. I figured it out. You want to know this? So they just in this year in Fate Grand Order put in Heroine Double X, and a bunch of her moves reference Godmars techniques. So it's obviously there because Heroine Double X is such a popular character, they had to put it into the schedule.
Yeah, that must have been it.
Expect also Edeon to be on there, obviously, because...
I look forward to it.
A bunch of other... That's why Edeon is on High Dive now, because a bunch of Heroine Double X's other attacks reference Edeon.
Now, actually, I'm looking at this list. Is this a lot of stuff that Discotech has picked up? Because I know they have Bananya, they have Godmars. I don't know about... So the other ones on here are Eat a Kiss, The Pilot's Love Song, Saint Seiya The Lost Canvas, and ZX Ignition.
I know somebody has The Pilot's Love Song. I can't remember who, though.
Yeah, I don't know. That was like my other, like, oh, maybe. I don't know. Also, there's just a random note in here that Bananya and episodes have a watermark at the bottom of every episode that reads TMS sample. Apparently only that show. They were like, we just can't find any other version anywhere except on literally on these American DVDs that were released. I'm all for getting more obscure stuff streaming, so I like this, but I can't watch it apparently because I do not have one of those 3 devices.
I now have one upstairs. So if you really want to watch Godmars, you can watch it upstairs, Kate.
The final note on here, which I like, is that TMS plans to stream more titles such as Lupin the Third.
Ooh.
So that would be really cool if they put, like, all of Lupin.
And that is a Discotech title, which lends credence to your Discotech theory.
Yeah, I mean, they're not mentioned at all in here, so that's just, like, a random note of mine. But I just, like, thought, oh, that's very interesting. Maybe they'll expand it so that you can just, like, I just don't understand if you can make a device, like, if you make a channel for a Roku or whatever, like, why is there not just a web page where I can go and watch that thing?
It seems logical.
Right? I think. Someone write in and explain it to me. Actually, don't, because that conversation was so confused. But yeah, if anybody tries these out, I'd like to hear, you know, what the quality, especially the quality and the translation, you know, are they using, like, their own translation? Like, what is it good? What are the subtitles like? I mean, it makes sense to me that, like, companies would try to cut out the middleman for these things, like, although I guess they make more money if they involve a middleman. I don't know. Because then they're like licensing it to somebody. So
the problem with these things always is we've seen a bunch of times Japanese companies try to cut out the middleman and those never usually go so well.
That's why I'm wondering about the translation and like quality of what they're showing. And I mean, it doesn't say anything here about this being... oh, it's free, but there's ads. So, like, you know, there's no subscription or anything, which is nice. I wonder how many ads there are, like, what they are of. Oh, like you know, have you ever actually watched Crunchyroll where it's free and you have to watch, like, 10 of the same ad?
Because, oddly enough, I was watching The Rookie, that Nathan Fillion show, just because I like Nathan Fillion. I was like, how was his show? And my God, by the end of watching the fourth episode, I must have seen that goddamn Ancestry.com ad like 90 times.
Yeah, see? Oh my God. Just switch it up for us.
With any of these things, the question always is, which of them do you think is the killer app? Which was the one show from that list do you think that would get people to watch?
It's obviously God Mars.
I see.
Number one. Number one in my mind. I've never actually watched it, but I really want to, so I think all other people feel the same.
All right. I mean, Kate does speak for the internet, so that makes sense. But speaking of really popular stuff and killer apps, I think we'll end up with our last news article being that they have made a list of the best-selling manga in Japan for 2018, and I think it's a pretty interesting list, so I think it's worth talking about. If anyone is shocked that the first one is One Piece, then clearly one has never looked at a what is the best-selling list out of Japan, because that is always there.
And it makes a note that this is the 11th year where it is number one. Just very incredible, but I do think, I'm not going to actually check, because that would involve me doing more research, but I think when we talked about this last year, that the gap between one and two was larger.
Mm-hmm.
So that One Piece was like three times as much or whatever as the second, whereas in this case, it's still ridiculously higher than number two. But I think it's like edging up, like something is sort of like slowly making its way closer to it. And that is My Hero Academia, which I don't think was number two last year.
No. I mean, it does seem to be a solid second. I mean, Jump must be... I still think they're still sweating a little bit, but I feel like at least now they have One Piece and My Hero Academia as the big one and two, and everything else, you know, is still, you know, below tiers. But for a while it was One Piece and, you know, everything else. This is kid. Actually, you did the research.
I know. I am such a liar. But I try to sound more like a rebel than I actually am.
But I think it's very telling that Attack on Titan has dropped. It's not like it's not totally off the list, but it was number two on the list last year, and now it's dropped down. And I think once again that huge delay in getting out this season did not do Attack on Titan any favors.
And this has nothing to do with anything except that isn't there a rumor that it's now hit? Like, it hit the climax or something like that? Like, was that something else?
Maybe? I know the thing that was on the list that I know is ending soon is Promised Neverland, which I had, like, a big conversation with somebody of how weird that is, because that series is doing really well from what I know. So I've always wondered, like, dear Promised Neverland manga, Ka, what magic do you have to let Jump let you end a series while it's still popular? Usually Jump's formula is, no, you're popular. You're going to just add filler arc and like extra extension arc after extra extension arc till you're not popular anymore. So the fact that, like, is the person who's doing that dying so they have to end the series soon?
Yeah, because it is, it's in the top 10 for best-selling of the year. So, Promised Neverland, that is, so.
Yeah, and it seems like, it's like, you know, I feel like I have a good place to end this series, so let's wrap this up while we're on top, which seems like something you'd normally want to do, but especially with Jump. I'm like, do you have compromising pictures of, like, the head of the company that lets you do this? Do you have such a killer idea that they're like, all right, you can end this series the way you want to because this series is going to make, your next idea is going to make us so much money, I guess we'll break our normal formula. But only once.
These people have a Two Love Rue-esque idea upcoming. That's what it is.
So the idea no one will vote for, but everyone will buy?
Yes, yes. And they know.
I see.
Al, you mentioned, you know, Titan. So Titan only dropped one slot, which is not so bad. I think, though, like essentially everything. So Promised Neverland wasn't on last year. And One Punch Man was on last year, but is not on this year. Oh, okay, wait. You wanted to talk about Snug, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, but the weirdest one that has to make everybody really feel bad because they're under it is Slam Dunk is on the list this year. And it's not like there's like Slam Dunk Crew, the Revengeance.
Is it like an anniversary year or something?
I don't know why it's on the list. I assume you're correct that it is an anniversary year or they put out some like super special old man classic edition of Slam Dunk. So, oh, I should say, old man edition that also ladies love as well, because Slam Dunk does have a fairly high female readership.
I mean, let's just call it the nostalgia edition.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's the best way of putting it. But yeah, you must be like, oh man, my series is really great, yet it still got beat by a series that's 20 years old.
I mean, Haikyuu is right under it, and those are the only two sports titles, so it's like...
Haikyuu, you're good, but not Slam Dunk good. You know, like, ah, man.
So close, so close. So, as you revealed, Al, I actually did go and look at the 2017 list and have it up here. So here's a couple of interesting tidbits. So one is that One Piece is still number one, but in 2017, the number is like 11 million. And in 2018, number one slot is only a little over 8 million. So like, that's like, oh, are sales, you know, like waning or whatever for things? But then, kind of conversely, the top 10, like number 10 in 2017 was like in the 2 millions range. But in 2018, the number 10 slot is over 3 million. So it's like, no, it just like jumbled around a little bit. I guess I didn't look. I didn't add all the numbers together. But like, it's interesting. There's just like a sort of a flux in like how much. And then I was right. So in 2017... One Piece was more than double the second title on the list. So, yeah. The one that I thought was interesting was That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime is on here, which is a light novel adaptation. And obviously, like, light novels, isekai stuff is very popular. But, like, I feel like, I don't know, it didn't just jump out at me as, like, that was going to be, like, the, you know, like, a big thing.
I do notice, and I don't know how much this has to do with anything, that I always see that manga at the library. And I've been watching the anime of that. It's pretty okay. It does seem to have a decent fan following because, once again, it seems to be constantly at... both the library in Manhattan and the library in Brooklyn I sometimes go to.
It does, of course, as you mentioned, it has an anime adaptation right now. But, of course, this is just for, like, over the whole course of the year. But, yeah, I guess it's somehow distinguishing itself from the other 5 million isekai stories that there are to read. And then, you know, the rest of the list is very the usual suspects, I guess. Kingdom is on here, which we talk about pretty much every end of the year time to go, hey, that's a series that we all vaguely know about that is not popular here.
But it's always on, like, top lists in Japan.
Tokyo Ghoul, we already know how we feel about that. But we acknowledge that it is insanely popular. And Seven Deadly Sins is, again, sort of just like a very standard shonen adventure kind of a story.
It's never any way poised to break the top, but it always seems to be in that, like, bottom top 10.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of only two Kodansha titles, so most other things, actually everything else is a Shueisha title, and everything else is, or everything is shonen. Every once in a while, there'll be something that isn't shonen that jumps into the top 10, maybe if it has like an adaptation or something, but not this time. Yeah, it's another year. It's another year of One Piece. It doesn't... I really am going to be curious to see what this is like next year, just because My Hero Academia is creeping. It's just, you know, making its way. It's certainly in the U.S. it's far surpassed the popularity of One Piece, because the popularity of One Piece is not that popular, but...
Other than the fact that the park we're near, there's that guy with the One Piece. He has Luffy on his car.
Oh, well, you know, I say not popular, but I mean not as popular as the other shonen things that are popular.
No, definitely.
It's not like nobody cares and nobody knows what it is, but... And I think it's interesting that Boruto is not on this list. Since I'm not really a Naruto fan, like, I don't really know what the general feelings about that are, but I thought it was interesting that it's not.
Like, you didn't expect it to be number 2, but the fact that it's not even number 10 is interesting. Yeah, no.
I'm trying to think, is there anything you think of that you're surprised isn't here?
I guess part of me is surprised and part of me isn't, just also considering the magazine it's in. But JoJo's is never, like, you don't see, like, JoJolion pop up, but I guess maybe the part of that is the problem that the JoJo's that's being animated is not the JoJo's that is what you buy in the store. Or maybe it's just one of those things where the people we know are all JoJo's fan, and it definitely has that fanatical niche following, but it's still not like a mainstream show. It's just one of those, if you're, all your friends are talking about it, you assume it's more popular than it actually is. Okay, so clearly, Kate, One Piece is going to be on the top of the list. Is there any title that you could think of that you would be interested or expect to see on the list next year that isn't there?
I guess I would say that I'm surprised that maybe Golden Kamuy doesn't show up here. It seems so popular, has a current running anime. So I don't know if it's, you know, just too weird to make it up, but there's been
one too many penis jokes.
I mean, that's why it's not on my top 10 list, but nobody asked me.
That wraps up another Speakeasy podcast. Remember to visit ReverseThieves.com for all kinds of content to tide you over until the next episode.